And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Yes, you are now entering into the apologetics zone. It's Virgin Most Powerful's apologetics, hands-on apologetics, where the rubber of catechesis meets the road of everyday life. This is the dojo, where we learn how to throw down error and also bring the light of Christ to people. My name is Gary Matuta, and we have a great program in store for you today. And we're going to have master apologist and also debater William Albrecht come into the dojo today. He's going to talk about, of all things, Christmas. You know, looking at the internet, watching videos on YouTube, it's not surprising that you'll encounter a lot of people who try to tar and feather Catholicism as being pagan. And there are even people out there that suggest that Christmas itself was a pagan holiday that Catholicism kind of adopted as its own and changed it around and made it Christianized. William Albrecht's going to come on the show. We're going to explore that to see whether any of that really has any basis in truth, in fact. So it's always fun to have William in the dojo, kind of cooks the energy level up a couple of notches. And we're going to also talk about finding the fallacies and meet the early church fathers. And if you would like to join us, give us a call, 1-888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Or you could always email your questions here at handsonapologetics.com. And we'd be glad to hear your questions. By the way, the finding the fallacy for today is vacuous truth fallacy. And meet the early church father, I didn't even mention who he was, is Pelagius. We've been talking about some fathers that were involved in a heresy known as Pelagianism. So that's, we're going to meet the arch-heretic himself for the Meet the Early Church Fathers segment today. And it's time to give my shout-outs to those watching on live stream, both on Facebook and YouTube and everywhere else. Hello. See lots of hellos in the chat room. Good morning and actually good afternoon here in Detroit area. It's kind of funny. We kind of straddled the morning and afternoon hours, so we're all over the place. Hello, Elizabeth and Ricky and M. Mousepal 1 and everybody else out there. I appreciate it. I should also note that for those who live in Southern California, February 20th, the dojo is coming to Covina. We're going to be in the Sacred Heart Chapel right there, you know, with I imagine it's probably not far from the actual studios, the headquarters, where all the good programming on Virgin Most Powerful is broadcasted. And I'm going to be coming there and talking apologetics. And like I said, you know, I live in the Detroit area, and most of my travel is out east, southeast, Midwest. Occasionally, I'll make it out to the West Coast. So this is going to be fun. We're going to be out there. I'm going to do a couple of shows live in studio. And I'm going to have Terry Barber is going to be one of my guests. I'm going to pick his brain, which should be a ton of fun. Talk about high energy right there. And then, like I said, on the 20th, I'm going to give a talk there. So for those in Southern California who love apologetics and maybe would come and like to meet me and actually see how tall I really am, you could stop by the Sacred Heart Chapel. And I'll give you more details when it gets closer. Just a FYI, because, you know, that's probably weighing very heavily on your mind, given the fact that Christmas is just around the corner, New Year's and all the other stuff, and Lent, you know, we're deep into Lent, so I'm sure the idea of the dojo coming out west is probably the first on everybody's minds. So, anywho, let's jump right into our Finding the Fallacy segment, shall we? And like I said, the Finding the Fallacy for today is called Vacuous Truth Fallacy. And vacuous truth, actually, to tell you the truth, I never heard of this until I was researching it for the show. And basically, there's a couple of definitions out there. I looked at several different sources. The one definition that seems to be the common denominator to all of these is that the vacuous truth fallacy refers to a conditional statement with a false antecedent. Okay. For example, now usually with logical explanations, examples help. It's a lot easier than actually hearing the definition. But it is conditional statement with a false antecedent. For example, if Detroit is in Michigan, okay, that's the conditional statement. If Detroit is in Michigan, then the Statue of Liberty is in France. Okay. So it has a conditional statement, if-then statement, in other words, and the antecedent with a false antecedent. Okay. Now, when I look at it, now it says such statements are considered vacuous because the fact that the antecedent is false prevents the use of the statement to infer anything true about the consequent. Actually, that's probably a bad example because the consequent is actually false and that's the antecedent is false. But it would be, it would be if the antecedent, if part of the statement is false, then it doesn't necessarily mean that the rest of it's true, the then part. So if the if is false, we can't infer anything from the then. So if Los Angeles is in Michigan, that's a false antecedent, then Detroit is in France. Well, it doesn't follow because the if part is totally vacuous. It's not true. So you can't infer something from a falsehood. So therefore, the consequent can't, you know, we can't say that that must necessarily follow. Okay, now that I messed up defining the fallacy for today, I leave it as homework to all of you in the dojo to do your own homework and work it out for yourself. But basically, it's if-then statement. If the if is a false statement, then it doesn't have any bearing on whether the conclusion is true, the consequent is true. So that's our finding the fallacy for today. And like I said, you know, you're going to have some homework on this show. You know, the host can't carry all the water. Boy, I got to get my mind straight today. Anyway, let's move perhaps to the Meet the Early Church Father for today. And the Early Church Father is Pelagius, who flourished roughly around AD 412. Okay. Now, he's unusual because usually with church fathers, they're usually a sign of orthodoxy, where Pelagius is considered a church father, but he's actually what's known as an arch-heretic, which means it's someone who starts a heresy, or someone that a heresy is identified with. Okay, so Pelagius, called the arch-heretic Pelagius, we don't know when he was born or when he died, but he was likely a native of Ireland, and the only reason, for any reason, is because his name indicates of the Isles. So this is an Irish arch-heretic, interesting enough. We do know that he came to Rome roughly around the year 384 AD and remained there as a monk until he eventually fled to Carthage with his disciple before the Visigoths entered Rome. So the Visigoths came and started doing damage. So Pelagius got out of town. He crosses over to North Africa in Carthage and makes his home in North Africa. However, in Carthage, his teachings, people started opposing him. And as you might know, one of the greatest church fathers of all time, St. Augustine, happened to be, he's in that area. So he ran into major opposition by St. Augustine. Eventually, in 411, Pelagius was excommunicated at the Council of Carthage, not surprisingly, and I'm sure Augustine was more than pleased that that happened. So he flees again. So Pelagius takes up refuge in the East, and there he meets yet another stellar early church father, St. Jerome, in 415, who also started penning works against his heresy, his theology. Although Jerome became a bitter enemy of his, there were some bishops who were friendly towards his position, namely John of Jerusalem. So once again, Pelagian doctrines were condemned in the councils of Carthage in 416, and also Pope St. Innocent I in 417 condemns them. And I think if you remember either last show or the show before, we mentioned how Pope Zosimus in 418 kind of vacillated a bit in regards to Pelagianism, but eventually he condemns it. So finally, Pelagianism gets condemned outright in the councils, the Ecumenical Council of Ephesus in 431 and Canons 1 and 4. So finally, it gets bumped up, and the Ecumenical Council reaffirms all these condemnations. And Pelagius kind of just disappears from the scene. We don't know what happened. Presumably, he eventually died. Last known whereabouts of him came around 418 or so. So, like I said, we're not really sure when he died. And so you're probably asking yourself, okay, Pelagius, what exactly was his heresy? Well, basically, Pelagianism is the affirmation of the self-sufficiency of man's free will. Pelagius asserted that by relying solely on our own powers, a man can do the will and do good, do the will of God and do good that's pleasing to him. Pelagius also further denied original sin. He denied the absolute necessity of baptism, which, of course, because after all, if there's no real original sin, there's no original sin to be taken care of in baptism. And he also presented a really distorted view of a theology of grace. Insofar as moral conduct is concerned, it's basically, you know, his view of grace was very, very distorted and unusual. However, oddly enough, he seems to have an exemplary life in terms of living life of virtue, despite the defects in his theology. So that's Pelagius. That's our Meet the Early Church Father for today. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking to Master Apologist William Albrecht about Christmas.
This is Terry Barber inviting you to the upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference, January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in downtown Covina. If you go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org, you can join us with that, or call us at 877-526-2151. Jesse Romero will be there, Father Wolfgang will be there, and our very own Matt Arnold will be there, and I'll be the MC. Don't miss out on this wonderful event, January 11th and 12th.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. We are talking about defending the faith. And I would like to bring up our next guest, or actually our first guest. Boy, I am just stumbling over my words today. Hang on. This is going to be a rough ride, but it's going to get a lot smoother with our next guest. William Albrecht, master apologist and debater. He's a convert to the Catholic faith. He's an international speaker and debater. He's participated in over 50 live and moderated debates. William has a website dedicated to the early church fathers that include unique translations, articles, commentaries, and debates that he has had on the fathers. And that website is www.patristicpillars.com. William, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Gary, thank you for having me on. Always a pleasure and a lot of fun.
Yeah, it definitely is. And after all, it's Christmas, so why not have some fun with Christmas, huh?
Exactly. That is absolutely correct, Gary.
Yeah, you know, it's surprising, William. I mean, if you just do a Google search or you do a search on YouTube, how many articles are out there where they accuse the Catholic Church of basically creating the Feast of Christmas like out of paganism, that it's really a pagan feast and therefore we shouldn't have anything to do with it? Have you noticed that too?
Yeah, actually, yes. I've heard that come up actually in debate as well. I debated that very topic, believe it or not. 4 years ago, I debated several things where certain atheists and those of the non-religious persuasion have accused the Catholic Church of basically robbing, copying a pagan festival. And that cannot be anything farther from the truth. That is absolutely incorrect there, Gary.
Yeah, that's a very common canard, isn't it? Because I you always hear that there was a pagan festival named Sol Invictus that took place on December 25th. And that, you know, once Christianity started becoming a majority, then it kind of like Christianity adopted this pagan celebration and kind of changed it. So was that the basic premise of the debate, was on Sol Invictus, or was it something different?
You know, it was, Gary, it was. And that point, great point that you bring up, because it usually always revolves around that. The claim that the Catholic Church robbed that festival and pretty much a lot of other pagan things and basically Christianized them. That claim is a very, very popular claim, Gary. But since we are talking apologetics, for your audience that would like to know, the best way to really answer that is to ask for firsthand source material. And once you do that, the people that are objecting will not be able to provide anything for you. So it might sound really fancy on a surface, but once you peel away that stuff and ask for the real meat and potatoes, there really is nothing there. And really, there is no evidence that the Catholic Church ripped any customs off from the pagans.
That's really interesting. So, yeah, so you basically call their bluff and say, okay, let's see your cards. And
yes.
So what is that, all the indirect references? Or there's no primary source material on this, huh?
There's no primary source material. What you're going to get a lot of is you're going to hear a lot of Constantine's name come up. You're going to hear a lot of Justin Martyr's name come up. But again, there's nothing. There's no substance in their claim in Constantine. And even Justin Martyr, as we'll see later on in the show, we're going to find out he is no friend to their argumentation in regards to pagan aping paganism as well. There really is no firsthand source material. And as you know very well, Gary, if you're going to be making such a tremendous claim as that, you better have good source material rather than my favorite scholar said that. To be honest with you, Gary, I've got my favorite scholars too. But you know what? Firsthand source material is what we need, and there is none when it comes to this level of argumentation.
Yeah, that's so surprising, William, because the objectors usually have such, they're so specific about, you know, December 25th, you know, that's when it was celebrated, you know, all this, the unconquerable sun, and then the sun to the sun, S-U-N to S-O-N, you know, and they come up with all these specifics. And so you just automatically assume, well, there must be some primary source that they're referring to, but this is all secondary stuff.
It is. It is. Not only is it all secondary, Gary, you'll find out that later on, as they run through these pagan deities, as they run down a list, they eventually do reach a list of certain pagans, certain pagan deities who eventually do have their birth dates on the 25th of December and are virgin born. But here's the interesting thing, Gary. All of these individuals, once you reach certain pagan deities that do have their birthday on that day, they date so late into the Middle Ages that it is obvious that they were copying from the Catholics, because there is no origin in paganism having this as a festival before the Catholics. So really, we have evidence that the pagans copied the Christians rather than the other way around.
Wow. So, yeah. So it's in terms of date of origin, it just chronologically doesn't make sense, huh?
It does not at all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. We have a few minutes. So where exactly does the date, if it wasn't taken from a pagan festival, why does the church celebrate December 25th as Christmas?
Very, very good question, Gary. We can look into the early church, and we're going to have to be completely honest. I know we have a few minutes. There are some early church fathers that do have the celebration of Jesus Christ on a day that was not December 25th. For instance, Clement of Alexandria in the late 190s, probably early 200s, talked about celebrating the birth of Christ, and particularly on May the 20th. But the overwhelming amount of fathers that did talk about a festival of a day when the birth of Christ was celebrated do list it as having been on December 25th. And Hippolytus of Rome is one of the earliest. In fact, an ancient work of his, which was his commentary in the book of Daniel, which, by the way, for the listening audience, that is a great commentary. In that commentary, he talks about the festival already being firmly in place, Gary, and this is around 205.
Wow.
Here's the interesting thing, Gary. He's not talking about, hey, you know what, people, I am going to basically establish a festival. He's talking about it having already been firmly in place by that time period. So this was ancient even by that time period, and that is incredible.
Wow. Yeah, that is incredible. In fact, can you read that section from the commentary for us?
Absolutely. I'm going to read it real briefly. It says, "For the first coming of our Lord in the flesh," talking about the incarnation, "in which he has been begotten in Bethlehem, took place December 25th, the fourth day in the reign of Augustus, the 42nd year, and in the year 5500 from Adam, and he suffered in his 33rd year. In the 18th year of Tiberius Caesar, during the consulate of Rufus and Rubellio." So what Hippolytus is telling us here in his commentary to Daniel, chapter 4, verse 23, section 23, rather, is he is talking about a celebration already being firmly in place on December the 25th as Catholics celebrate to this day. This is already dated around 205. But definitely we know this is ancient, even at that time period, because it was already firmly in place at the time that Hippolytus wrote this.
Right. Yeah, very good. Well, Mr. Engineer, do we have a call? I see somebody up on the board, but I'm not sure if that's a call or not. Okay, it's not a call. Okay. Yeah, that's fascinating because, you know, he basically stakes out. Now, remember how early that is. That is 205 A.D., and he unreservedly points to December 25th during the reign of Augustus as when Christ was born. So it, yeah, right. I mean, that really predates a lot of pagan sources, doesn't it?
It sure does. In fact, you would be hard pressed to find a pagan source earlier than that. And just the mere fact that we can see in Hippolytus that this was already a feast that was being practiced within the church shows you that it must have come much earlier than 205,
right.
much earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So now, is he the only one? Or I'm sure that's probably the earliest, but do we have any other mention that of Christmas being celebrated around this time?
Great question. He is definitely probably the earliest that we do have solid record of that you can look up in ancient manuscripts and you can find this. But we can also go to a church father named John Cassian, and he records in what is called his Collations in the early 400s that the celebration of the birth of Jesus was on December 25th. And here's a very interesting part, Gary, because terminology is very important when we're reading the early church fathers. And he tells us that this celebration of the birth of Christ was an ancient custom. So we know from even John Cassian in the early 400s that this was ancient and celebrated by the early church.
Yeah, so that basically confirms what we see with Hippolytus, with that, yeah, absolutely it's ancient, because 200 years later, you know, he mentions the same date, the same festival, and he says it's ancient. Wow, okay. And so you have John Cassian in the 400s, you have Hippolytus in 205, which still amazes me. That is just so ancient. Any other church fathers point to December 25th? Oh, I think we lost William. Oh, boy. I love technology, don't you, folks?
I'm back on.
Oh, you're back. Oh, good. Because, your space just... Well, I'm glad you're back, because I was going to say, okay, so we got... We're already kind of liking making a chain of testimony already, beginning with Hippolytus, 205, and then you have John Cassian. Who else can we add to this chain?
Very good question. We can add Paul of Emesa and Cyril of Alexandria, who give evidence that this feast was on December 25th. And remember, if we look at their dates, these are early church fathers that are writing at a very, very early period of time. For instance, Cyril of Alexandria, who I will add, was a patriarch of Alexandria. He was a patriarch, writing in the early 400s. For him to tell us that this was a festival that was already firmly being celebrated within the church, and him holding such a high position, that is very, very relevant and very important as an early testimony to the celebration of this feast on that day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a very strong testament to December 25th, and also John Chrysostom, right?
Yes, that is correct. John Chrysostom as well does tell us that this was celebrated on December 25th. I also want to add, the great Basil the Great also testifies, and if anybody would like to read his commentary on the festival of St. Stephen, when he's commenting on church festivals in the year 380, he makes mention that there is a very important festival being celebrated in the church, and that was the festival of the birth of Christ on December 25th.
Awesome. Well, hold it right there. We're talking to William Albrecht about Christmas, of all things, and the Christian roots of Christmas. Stay tuned, everybody.
Matthew Arnold here, encouraging you to go to vmpr.org to register for our upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference this January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. Father Wolfgang will be speaking along with Jesse Romero, Terry Barber as MC, and yours truly, talking about spiritual warfare and the family. Protect your family now. Go to vmp.org and register for this conference. Don't miss it.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome, everybody. We're back at Hands-On Apologetics. We're talking to Master Apologist and debater William Albrecht of www.patristicpillar.com. And we're talking about Christmas and trying to show that Christmas is actually a Christmas feast, which is, you know, kind of a strange thing. The Christian roots of Christmas is actually doubted by some who want to purify the faith of any kind of pagan influence. But unfortunately, as William's been telling us, that they do so at the expense of very ancient and, you know, reliable customs. William, I have a question for you. You have to wonder, okay, well, why December 25th? Wasn't this part of, like, an overall Christian chronology about Christ's life?
Yes, it was, absolutely. And I would say, I'm gonna toss out this argument, Gary, and see what you think about it. I honestly think that from my personal opinion, I can see, even as early as the time of Justin Martyr, you can see the Christians were becoming very, very frustrated at the fact that the pagans were imitating them in so many different areas. So from what I can tell, as the time goes on, Gary, the pagans are basically copying and ripping traditions from the Christians. So even in Justin Martyr's time, which is very early, we can see that Justin Martyr is frustrated that the pagans are ripping off these ideas. So as far as festival days go, we know that even as we spoke about in the previous show, even Halloween, even that type of festival originates in Christianity. And the same, I think, is with the December 25th. We know that that date is originally a Catholic date, and later paganism copied that.
Right. But didn't now, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Hippolytus have a chronology where he posited that Jesus was conceived on March 25th?
You're correct. Absolutely. You are definitely correct on that.
Yeah. So it's part of like an entire chronology. So this date didn't just pop out of nowhere. As if they stole it from a different source. It was like locked in. You know,
right.
To this thing.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah, you stole my thunder, because that was my next question to you was, you know, the theory is that Christianity was just slowly getting off the ground and it wanted more pagan converts. So it adopted like pagan feasts to make it more attractive so that it would have more converts. But you're absolutely right. The case is actually the flip side. It was Christianity from the word go just explodes across the pagan world, and it's really paganism that starts becoming Christianized in order to hold on to its inheritance.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. To try to hold on, to try to keep some semblance of relevance there, we can see that paganism begins ripping off so much from Christianity. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's funny because, I know exactly what you're talking about. And, Justin Martyr, basically, he levels the charge that the reason why some of the pagans around him are doing things that seem Christian is because they're actually ripping off things that they read in Moses and Christian practices as well.
Yes, that is absolutely correct.
Okay, well, that's December 25th and the Feast of the Nativity. What about since we're on this subject, and I didn't touch on this when we were talking about the virgin birth, I think it was last week. There's this charge out there that the idea of the virgin birth, that the Virgin Mary gave birth to Jesus, was actually something that was thoroughly pagan, and that the New Testament writers, specifically Matthew, kind of adopted so that it would be attractive to Gentiles. What do you make of that charge?
That is a very common charge you can find nowadays. In fact, I would say that is one of the most popular arguments. Yeah. And if you look, if you examine, the Jesus mythicist movement love to bring that argument up. If you look at what is considered basically of individuals, these are scholars, and I know them personally. I've debated two of them. What is considered the Holy Trinity of Jesus mythicists, you'll find Robert Price. Yeah.
Unholy.
They love that title. Yeah, you'll find Robert Price, John Loftus, and Richard Carrier that are popular for making this argument. And I would recommend your audience, since this is an apologetic show, look up two debates I've had against Robert Price and against John Loftus, and they bring up these very arguments, Gary. And when you demand, when you put their feet to the so-called fire and demand firsthand evidence, there's nothing there. For instance, there's a popular movie, and I won't give the name because it's not a very good movie. It talks about the virgin birth being ripped off from pagan sources, and they name, I'm going to give three names right away. They name They name Adonis, they name Attis, and they name Baal. And right away they say these are three pagan sources, and Jesus Christ is a complete ripoff of these three pagan deities.
Wow. Yeah. I know the film that you're talking about. Yeah, trust me.
Yes.
Folks, we are doing you a favor not telling the name. So
that's correct.
It's a bad movie in all the senses of the word bad, except for perhaps immoral. But even then, it's a little blasphemous. But yeah, okay. So you got Adonis, you have Attis, and Baal. Okay, well, what about Adonis? Like, what's the story with Adonis and the virgin birth?
Very interesting, Gary, and I do want I hope you and your listening audience can perhaps excuse me or forgive me when I laugh, but when we look at Adonis, being the claim of him being virgin-born is a little bit ridiculous, because the earliest testimony of Adonis says that he was born from a myrtle. So there's no virgin birth there. He was not a son of God, was not even a savior, and was definitely not virgin-born. So that we can right away we can cross off Adonis, and then
he was born from a myrrh tree.
Yes, he was born from a myrrh tree. That is absolutely correct. And remember this, Gary. These are supposed pagan deities that completely are supposed to destroy the image of Christ for us.
Right. Yeah, I mean, once you think of that, picture that, you know, immediately you think of Bethlehem, right? I mean.
Yes, right.
Being born from a myrtle.
Yeah, right.
So he was a sapling, literally.
Literally, he was literally a sapling. Yes, and he was not even a son of God. So right off the bat, you can see that there really is just no. I mean, even if we go down the list of so many other categories, such as comparing whether or not these deities resurrected, which is a whole other topic, there just is no parallelism there.
Right. Yeah. Sure. What about Attis?
Very
what do they
question.
Have to say about Attis?
Yeah, if we look at Attis right away, we can see that Attis was not virgin-born, and Attis was instead conceived by fruit. So yeah, you did hear that correctly. Attis was conceived by fruit. Yeah, the earliest documentation, the earliest manuscripts, and the earliest testimony of the earliest manuscripts about Attis testify that he was conceived by a fruit in the earliest tales. And you really don't think of Jesus Christ when you think of Attis being conceived by fruit, do you?
No, I can't even think about. I can't even picture that.
No, not at all.
So his parents were fruit? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to be honest with you, Gary. I have no clue what that ancient testimony is trying to say. I mean, I just don't. I've read it over and over, and to be quite honest with you, no matter which way you look at it, it just seems ridiculous. I mean, there's no parallelism at all between Attis and between Jesus Christ. And really, to toss Attis' name out there, along with all these other pagan deities, I guess is to try and sound sophisticated. But when you peel away, what's below the surface really just is, it's kind of silly, Gary.
Yeah, you know, it's best here to like redefine what do we mean by the virgin birth. We mean that a human virgin woman conceives a child without the aid of a male progenitor, right? And so these don't even fit within that category. You know, I have to say this. I guess you could say Addis must have been the apple of, you know, the apple of the eye of her parents. You know? Quite literally.
Literally, quite literally. You're correct in regards to that.
Yeah, you know, I'm always surprised because when you look at these the mythicist parallels and just approach it saying, I'm going to read this and see if it's, you know, Jesus jumps right off the page. How foreign. I mean, they're just utterly foreign to not only Christianity, but, you know, the whole Jewish revelation as well, you know, Old Testament revelation.
Yes.
Yeah, what about Baal?
Very good, very good. Yes, this is another early pagan deity that, unfortunately, even if you examine Justin Warren, you can just see the complete silliness here. We don't even know how this pagan deity was born, but this pagan deity was not virgin-born. This pagan deity is presented as a sort of son of God, but in a very different manner. So the parallelism really ends right away when we can see this deity was not virgin-born. So that ends right away. The parallelism there is cut off right at the root, if you will.
Right. And so since these are the three big names that are put up by mythicist movies and so on, you assume those would be the strongest of all parallels.
Right. Right. You would assume.
And all we end up is with a tree, some fruit, and this Baal that apparently was not virgin born. We got maybe about a minute or so. Are there any other foreign? Well, you know, I don't want to. This is really interesting to me. I think maybe we'll just hold it right there before we get to the break, because I don't want to rush through this. This is
right.
This is out there.
We got a lot more left. We got a lot more left.
Yeah. Why do you think it's so popular? You know, real quick. Why do you think mythicist view is so popular?
I think it is popular because the audience, modern day audiences love a good conspiracy story. And this, at its surface level, sounds like a great conspiracy tale. But once you peel all this away, Gary, really, there's just nothing. There's no substance there. There's no, as we like to call it, there's no meat and potatoes there.
Yeah, yeah. And the bad part, I can tell you folks, just by trying to run down these sources, it's very hard to get the sources. Because there's not like an official book of what people believed about Addis or believed about Adonis. It's just a bunch of stories, and the stories conflict and so on. And, you know, it's hard to even just get a picture of what the pagans believed, let alone any kind of parallels. Well, yeah, I hear the music coming up. On the other side of the break, we're talking with William Albrecht about the supposed pagan roots of Christmas. You don't want to miss the rest. Stay tuned.
Terry Barber, I want to invite you to the Spiritual Warfare Conference coming January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. It's going to be fantastic. I want to encourage you to sign up by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. One of the speakers is sitting right next to me, Matthew Arnold. Matt, what are you going to be telling our folks about?
I'm going to tell them about my journey into the Catholic Church, because in my younger days, I was in the entertainment business. I was all involved with cult beliefs and practices like tarot cards and astrology and even channeling. And I had my own brush with the demonic.
Wow. Not only Matt, but Father Wolfgang from the Opus Angelorum, popular priest, he's welcome back. And our friend Jesse Romero, my partner on the Terry and Jesse Show, will be there. Don't miss it. Go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call us at 877-526-2151.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
All right, welcome back to Hands-On Apologetics. We are talking to William Albrecht. And William, you know, debated extensively on all sorts of different apologetic topics, including the topic that we have today, namely Christianity or the virgin birth. Is Christmas all this rooted in paganism? And we're talking about some of the supposed parallels between these pagan deities and the story of Christmas. William, what about Dionysius, the pagan god Dionysius? Was he born of a virgin just like Jesus?
Not at all, Gary. And that is such a good question, because let's call them a big four, if you will, and add Dionysius as well to the list of those that that these individuals love to put forth as being evidence that Christianity ripped from pagan sources. Actually, he was not virgin born at all. In fact, Zeus lay with Semele secretly. So we know the very origin of this story shows that this certain pagan deity was not virgin born. And in fact, I'm going to add a very interesting tidbit for the audience, Gary. As far as I know, as far as I've found, the earliest evidence of him having been virgin born, the earliest tales date till around maybe the 1000s, which is way after the gospel stories, way after.
Wow, that late, huh? Yeah, I was going to say, well, how in the world could they come up with that? So that kind of like feeds into what I said right before the break, is that it's not like there's a catechism of pagan gods where, you know, there's an official...
Not at all.
This is what pagans believe. There's all sorts of different stories. They vary from location to location and time to time.
Yeah. That's such a great point you bring up there, Gary, because before we move to the next one, I'm going to make one quick comment. The great Bishop Photius from the 9th century, he does comment on what you just said there. He, when he talks about these... these pagan stories, that he begins to give commentaries on them, stories that mention virgin births. And he says, not only does he note that they are dated rather late, but he begins to say that they are great, great tales. But that's as far as he'll go, because he'll say that they may be great stories, Gary, but then he says that they are full of fiction. They're stories that have varied over the years, and really, they're just fictional tales, and they come at a very late date. So really, they don't have what Catholicism does have, Gary, and that is that pedigree, that ancient chain that can date back to the time of Christ. And that is such a clear distinction, isn't it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, this is just a small sampling. Like, there is also the god Horus. I've heard his name bandied about. Is there any parallels there, William?
No, there's no parallels there in Horus. In fact, if you look at Horus, you can toss out so much, even in terms of the fact that there is no resurrection account there as well. You've got Hermes as well, another popular, and I mentioned them both because they both begin with the H, and there's no parallelism there either. There's no virgin birth in either of them. So the Catholicism, the idea of them ripping, just isn't there, Gary.
Yeah. How about Krishna? Let's go outside, even like Western paganism. Krishna. What can you say about him? Was he virgin born?
Well, I mean, if you consider being the eighth son, maybe, but he was definitely not. And let me add another very interesting thing. Krishna was considered an avatar of God. So you've got a lot of really of stuff that really varies from the early Catholic, early Christian stories of the gospel.
Yeah, right.
Really, there just isn't parallelism there.
Yeah, so even when you go outside of these, you know, traditional European kind of pagan deities, it becomes even more distorted, more foreign, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does.
Now, how about Tammuz? Now, Tammuz, isn't that a Babylonian god, if I remember?
That is absolutely correct. And there, again, even there, if we look at Tammuz, who also goes by the name, I believe, Dumuzi. I'm not exactly certain how to pronounce that. I do know a certain of these go by other names as well. But Tammuz, the most popular, the most well-known name of this pagan deity, again, there is just there's nothing that lines up there with Tammuz and with the early gospel narratives with the virgin birth. It just, there's nothing there. There's no substance.
That's interesting you brought this up, because like I said, when I was looking at the biblical roots of the virgin birth, like I couldn't possibly cover this material because there's just so many supposed claimants.
Yeah.
And yet if you look deeply at it, you find out that it you know, it's these weird stories that have no parallel.
You're right. Like Mithras, look at Mithras. Mithras was born from a rock. I mean, it's just, it doesn't
get. It's a chip off the old block, huh?
Yeah, chip off the old block.
Yeah. In fact, I know Justin Martyr, when he was dialoguing with Trypho the Jew, Trypho kind of brings up Perseus as, you know, but the funny thing is, like, Trypho never says, "You Christians ripped off Perseus." Instead, he says, "Why do you believe something like, you know, Perseus?" So in prep for the show, and I didn't use it on the show, but I did some research, and of course you have all these slightly different variations of the story. But apparently, you know, Perseus was kept in a prison because the mother, there was a prophecy that the father would be killed by her child, so he puts her in this prison, and it was open to the sky. So the god Jupiter comes in the form of a golden rain and impregnates the mother. So it's like, that's a virgin birth, you know? What kind of
Wow.
It's crazy. So I always ask people, you know, that believe this, that look at these stories and see if Christianity jumps out at you. And then, you know, try to look at it from the pagan view. I would doubt any pagan looking at these stories would immediately say, "Ooh, that sounds just like that Christian story," you know? I mean, they would probably recoil at that. So
I agree. Yeah, they probably would.
Yeah, yeah. So William, is there any early evidence that Christ was unique and, you know, was categorically different from these pagan
Yes,
deities?
In fact, if you look at Justin Martyr, I always love going to Justin Martyr because Justin Martyr was one of the very first apologists of the church. And Justin Martyr, In his dialogues, you're going to find, as you were mentioning Trypho earlier, you're going to find a lot of dialogues against what he viewed as heretical movements or heretical thoughts. And in particular, he does mention paganism in several locations. But what is so interesting, Gary, is I'm going to read a brief portion of his first apology, chapter 54. This is what he says, his 54th verse here. It says, "They heard the words of the prophets." I'm talking about the pagans here, which before he calls them wicked demons, which we would agree. He says, "They heard the words of the prophets, and they did not understand them accurately, but they made mistakes in imitating what was told about our Christ." So right away, that should really, really shoot out at you that Justin Martyr sounds frustrated here, even going as far as saying that they're influenced by wicked demons because they're trying to imitate the Christians, but they're doing a terrible job about it.
Right.
Yeah, terrible.
So basically he's saying they're dependent on Christianity, not Christianity dependent on them.
That is correct. Justin is very clear. He's making it clear for the audience that these prophecies are basically being messed up. He's saying that these individuals, these pagans who he compares to demons, they try to rip off the Old Testament, and instead, they just made a big mess of the prophecies. And here's another thing he says, Gary, towards the end of the chapter 54. He says, And we assert that the Word of God, talking about Christ, of course, the Logos, was born of God. And this is what really is important to note, Gary, in a peculiar manner. So he's pointing out that the virgin birth is different from the births of all of these other pagan deities. There just isn't parallelism there. And by that mere fact, Justin Marrou is able to show that these are very grave mistakes that you can find in paganism.
Yeah, and he should know because, you know, he's surrounded. He's actually writing apologies, you know, in defense of Christianity against the pagans.
Yeah.
So him claiming that this is that the Word of God was born of God in a peculiar manner, I mean, he more than anybody would know that there's just no pagan parallels.
Yeah, and that would serve as a very early individual, and in fact, a firsthand testimony of a witness who could see at the time that there was no parallelism in the early pagan sources. And if you try to ask a pagan or an individual purporting this to be having been ripped off in paganism to show a firsthand source, they will not be able to do it. But we can provide early, early evidence.
Very good. Yeah, well, hey, William, great job going through all this material. Man, you think you got a handle on all the evidence until, you know, you just keep reviewing, and it's just fascinating.
It's great.
So, hey, thank you for doing this. How can people get a hold of your material?
Fantastic. Yeah, people can find me at www.patristicpillars.com, and there they can find a bunch of debates on the early church fathers, a lot of early translations, new translations, original translations, and a lot of articles leading up to future debates that I have on the early church fathers.
Wow. Well, thank you, William. Yeah, definitely check it out. Lots of great information on patristicpillars.com. Thank you, William.
Gary, I look forward to being on again. Have a great one.
You too. And that was William Albrecht, master apologist. And boy, that was a lot of fun looking at the Christian roots of Christmas. You know, who would think people would deny that? But, you know, there are detractors. Unfortunately, there's people who call them disciples of Christ that call upon Jesus' name that nevertheless, they're very suspicious about the Christian past. And hopefully this clarifies some of the misunderstandings out there, because there's a lot of misunderstandings to clear up. So, hey, coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the biblical roots, the biblical teaching of Mary as the mother of all Christians. That's something that I think all of us should be able to know where you can find that in the Bible. And also coming up Friday, Master Apologist Carlo Broussard is coming to the dojo, and he's going to talk to us about relativism. And he does such a great job. I'm looking forward to Friday's show. So guess what, ladies and gentlemen? It's hard to believe that this hour has just flown. But, you know, it's time for me to turn out the lights here at the dojo and start powering down the Midwest Command Center. Because coming up next, you don't want to miss the high impact, high energy talk radio, Catholic talk radio with the Terry and Jesse Show. And who knows, maybe this episode, Terry and Jesse is actually going to tell us what's on their minds and stop hemming and hawing and all this other stuff. I'm Gary Machuda. Have a blessed day, everybody. Talk to you later.
Scripture tells us that David beat Goliath with a sling and 5 smooth stones. Funny, the rosary looks kind of like that. The rosary is a Catholic devotional prayer. A set of 1 Our Father followed by 10 Hail Marys is called a decade. You do 5 decades and you have a rosary. And for each decade, we meditate on a mystery from Jesus' life. So the prayers we're breathing in and out set the stage for an encounter with the Word of God. Do a quick search online for the mysteries of the Rosary, which are different for each day of the week. What I really love about old-school Catholic devotionals like this is simplicity. I'll be honest, it's not always easy to pray or to lead my family in prayer. What do I do? What do I say? Rosary, problem solved. Look, every family's a mess in its own special way. Bring God into the mess. Your family's problems might be Goliaths. Maybe the solution's as simple as a sling and 5 smooth stones. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.